Well, thank you all for joining us for this briefing. I'm happy to be joined by a very capable and talented team of leaders, and they will all have a chance to be a part of this press briefing, and I'll introduce them in order after I finish my comments. Number one, at this time, we have now declared 53 counties state disaster areas. They have all received the governor's proclamation, which allows for state assistance and state assistance in terms of emergency response. So this is obviously a statewide challenge. Dozens and dozens of Iowa communities, large and small, whether it's Columbus Junction, Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, a long list of areas of concern, in particular Mason City. They still have no water there. Nashua has also lost their water treatment. New Hartford, the whole town was evacuated and flooded out. Iowa City has serious challenges there. And the river is not expected to crest there until the middle of next week, so we have some time to continue our preparedness efforts there. Palo, Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids, Vinton are all having major challenges at this time. In addition, with the expected precipitation tonight, we could have some other communities impacted, like Fort Dodge and Ottumwa, and everything south of Ottumwa feeding into the Mississippi River. The current weather forecast is 2 to 3 inches potentially statewide, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens here in terms of the next 24 hours in terms of additional rain, but certainly that could very well complicate the challenge that we have. The good news is we are working around the clock. I have mobilized the Iowa National Guard working with General Dardis. We have up to 2,000 troops that are ready. Many of them have been deployed. We currently have 38 missions across the state using the National Guard, and General Dardis will get into the particulars related to those missions. We have 9 rivers across the state that are at or above record levels. We are seeing historic levels of in terms of cresting of these various rivers. In some cases, in Columbus Junction, for example, 4 feet above the 1993 level. Elkader, the flood level is at 12 feet. The Turkey River there crested at 31 feet. So, and in Cedar Rapids, finally, we are preparing for what could be a 500-year flood level. But the good news, again, is that we are working with our county emergency management coordinators around the clock to do everything we can to protect the public. That's what our priority here is, public safety. And I have traveled across the state with the Commissioner of Public Safety, Gene Meyer, and with General Dardis, and we're doing everything we can to assess the situation, to respond, to speak directly with those local officials, to hear from residents, to hear from businesses and others that have been impacted, so that we can effectively react and respond and provide assistance and backup. We have 9 shelters open across the state. We are evacuating people. 1,800, for example, have been evacuated in Cedar Rapids. We're also evacuating people in Cedar Falls at this time, and those shelters are set up. We also appreciate very much the support of the Red Cross and the Salvation Army. We have 8 feeding vehicles set up across the state that the Red Cross has set up, and 1 unit, the Salvation Army, has fed 1,000 people in Mason City as well. In terms of road closures, there are a number of them. We have 14 state roads major roads that are closed, 14 smaller state highways that are closed, dozens and dozens of county roads, and dozens of bridges that are either closed or completely washed out. So because of that, we all obviously are calling on Iowans and all motorists to pay attention to the warnings that are given on a regular basis, to pay attention to public safety officials, and to stay off the roads completely, if at all possible, in those areas of the state that are impacted. To further complicate things, we currently are under a tornado watch for most of western Iowa. The complete third section of the state of western Iowa is currently under a tornado watch. There was a tornado spotted in northwest Iowa at 5:25 p.m. South of George, Iowa, in Lyon County. So that front is expected to continue across the state in terms of those tornado watches throughout the evening. So we need Iowans to continue to monitor the weather situation, to pay very close attention to any advice that is given from the local emergency management officials in terms of evacuations potentially, to in terms of seeking shelter, obviously, with this tornado watch statewide, and to monitor weather radios as well. And if there is an evacuation request, there's a mandatory evacuation, for example, in Cedar Rapids and for a certain neighborhood involving about 1,800 people, mandatory means mandatory. It's not optional. And it further complicates our rescue efforts and our response efforts if residents do not follow those orders and those directions. And so whether it's a motorist staying off the roads and not complicating things, or someone being asked to evacuate, whether it's mandatory or voluntary, we urge them to follow the advice of those public safety and emergency management professionals. So continue to pay close attention. Finally, I want to thank the tens of thousands of Iowans all across the state who have really done amazing things. They've locked arms, they've worked together. I've been to more than a dozen communities in the last 2 days traveling the state. And although we're fighting a tough battle here, we are resilient, we're determined, and we're committed to protecting our neighbors and our friends in these communities across the state. And I really want to commend the emergency management folks here at the state operation, and also those 99 county coordinators, in particular those 53 coordinators now where we have county or state disaster areas. So we're going to continue finally to need people to volunteer to help. There's a number if you want to help sandbag, for example, 1-800-447-1985, 1-800-447-1985. The more people we have, obviously, helping and pitching in, the more effective we can be in terms of our mitigation efforts and our response efforts. And we have that hotline will coordinate these volunteers and plug them in across the state for help. With that, I'll turn it over to General Dardis, and he will give you a briefing on the National Guard. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor, and good evening, everyone. As the Governor said, we have mobilized the Iowa National Guard for this statewide disaster, and that's the uniqueness of the National Guard. The Guard is the only service that takes an oath, both state oath and federal oath. We have both a state and federal mission, and this is an opportunity for us to execute that state mission and come to the aid of Iowans in a time of need. The reason for our mobilization of the Iowa Guard is to allow access to our soldiers and our airmen, and to strategically place our force in areas where we expect missions to be, and we're being proactive versus reactive. Presently, we have about 640 members of the Iowa Guard on state active duty. This number is changing as I speak. We expect to be in that 1,500 to 1,700 range in the very near future. We are organized by task forces. Example, Task Force Cedar Rapids, Task Force Southeast, Task Force Des Moines, Task Force Waterloo, and then of course we have the 185th Air Refueling Wing and the 132nd Fighter Wing that are also involved. Let me just review some of our mission numbers with you at this time. Butler County, we have two members of the Guard participating in a generator mission. Camp Dodge, 13 soldiers staged for emergency water supplies. Cedar Rapids, 30 for sandbagging and transportation, and we have the 185th Air Refueling Wing en route with about 100 to 200 airmen to assist in evacuation and security missions in the Cedar Rapids area. Charles City, 6 for security. Clinton, 13 for emergency water supply mission. Dubuque, 13 for the emergency water supply mission. Cedar Falls, we're 300 plus for security, evacuation, sandbagging, and also our assistance and advisory team that are working with the local officials there. Iowa City, 40 at the present time, and that's transporting of sandbags. Johnston, 8 for security. Linn County, 2 for the assistance team. Palo, 16 for security. Vinton, we had 100 soldiers there for sandbagging missions. In Waverly, we had 12 for a security mission. These are examples of the missions that the Iowa Guard is involved in today. We started out with an aerial recon mission with the governor as we flew around the state to assess the damage that that is clearly a statewide disaster. We had we also have the primarily the security mission, and of course public safety has a lead on that mission, and the Iowa Guard is in support of that security mission. Then obviously the evacuation and sandbagging mission also. One reminder that I would like to give to you at this point is that I would just recommend that you please use the process that's in place. I'm talking to our local communities out there. Work through your county coordinators if you have needs and requirements through Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and then that those needs and requirements can be missioned back here at the Emergency Operations Center and resourced by the Iowa Guard or other state agencies. Again, the Iowa Guard is executing our state mission, and we will assist Iowans in any way that we can. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General Dardis. Commissioner Gene Meyer, the Commissioner of Public Safety, will give you an update.
Thank you. We have shifted several of our state troopers from western Iowa to eastern Iowa in support of the security missions and road closures that exist around the state. We're going to benefit greatly now from the help of the National Guard to help us in that mission. And the governor mentioned that there are several closed roads in this state, and I want to encourage the general public to go to your local media website. There's a link on most all those media websites to our 511 map that'll show you where those closures are. But of greater concern to me are the ones that we don't know about. And so I want to caution Iowans as they travel, and especially as they travel at night, to be extremely cautious and to drive carefully, especially on gravel roads, on county roads. If you come across a hazard in the roadway with water over the road and there's no signage, please pick up your phone and report that to your local law enforcement agency so we can add that road to our 511 maps. So please, especially at night, be very, very cautious so you don't go driving off into deep water accidentally. The next thing I would say is that we need plenty of volunteers. The governor's talked about that. But we don't need people who want to come watch volunteers work. And so all across this state, stay home if at all possible. Don't go out to look at the high water. Don't go out to look at the dike being built. We don't need what we all know as gawkers. And the last thing I would mention is, you know, listen to your local law enforcement people, your police chief, your sheriff, your county emergency manager coordinator. If they tell you that they need you to evacuate, they don't make that decision lightly. They know how much you value your property, but we all value your life and your public safety. So what's most important is if they tell you to leave, please do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Meyer. Obviously, we have real concerns about our capital city of Des Moines here. We are also seeing record or near record flooding levels of both the Des Moines and the Raccoon River. We have concerns about the Sailor Vale Reservoir as well. And so we've asked the mayor, Mayor County, to join us for an update for the local residents as well. Mayor?
Thank you, Governor. Quickly, as an update in the city of Des Moines, I want to, again, as I've done a couple times today, reassure all of our citizens in the greater metro area that our waterworks is running, it is operating, there is fresh, potable, drinkable water, and we do not see a circumstance at this time where we are going to lose that water. So those of you who have heard other rumors, why cast them aside and know that at this time, until any official notice, we are safe with our water, with not only the plant, which is in Waterworks Park, but also the L.D. McMullen plant that's at the reservoir. So we feel very confident about that. As many of you know, we are watching very carefully both rivers, the Raccoon and the Des Moines River. We're watching the heights that are occurring at Sailorville, and have worked very closely with the Polk County EOC and A.J. Mum in coordinating all the efforts of not only the city of Des Moines, but working with all of our neighbors in the metropolitan area to keep everybody updated. Specific to Des Moines, as we watch at this time, we are always ready to let our people know if there's a need for evacuations. Up to this moment, I will tell you that we'll kind of knock on wood. We are comfortable that in the short term, we are not going to see the floodwaters go over our levees. However, I will say that we are watching, for those of you that are in the metropolitan area, very closely the areas around Birdland, and just to see what's going to happen there and see if the flood levels over the next few days are going to reach a point whereby we may discuss people possibly evacuating. But at this time, we don't see that as a possibility, but we are watching those areas as well as a couple more. But that's the first area that we're watching very closely. A question came up earlier about some flooding that occurred in the Court Avenue area in downtown Des Moines today. That was essentially a surcharge on the sewer system. It was not water coming over the levee or anything like that. We essentially, in the city of Des Moines, as cities and towns all around this state, we get water potentially from rivers and rain. We get in our basement sometimes, we get groundwater, and then sometimes you get either storm sewer or sanitary sewer backup. So we have three sources that we watch, and we know that all the citizens are watching very closely. But know that we are working very closely with everybody, and I'm proud to say that we are coordinating our efforts, trying to get the information out, and let everybody know on a very timely basis what's going on in and around our capital city. And we will continue to try to keep everybody updated on a very regular basis. But at this time, that's the update. Governor, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. In the last few days, I have visited Iowa City twice, been to Mason City, Charles City, Nashua, Palo, Vinton, Cedar Falls twice, Decorah, Alcater, Cedar Rapids, and Columbus Junction. Tonight, or in the coming days, I should say, that we are prepared to continue to get out across the state. Secretary Paulson is coming in, the FEMA director, on Friday. And it is likely I will again tour those areas of the state with the most severe concerns at that time with the secretary and also with our members of our congressional delegation. And I want to add that they have all been extremely helpful. Our Senator Harkin, Senator Grassley, the five members of our congressional delegation, and as well. I was with Congressman Loebsack today in eastern Iowa. I will be with Congressman Braley as well in the next day or two, and I've already been with Congressman Latham in Mason City. So we really appreciate the coordinated response and concern from our members of our congressional delegation, and it's tougher for them to get back here given their responsibilities in Iowa, but they are certainly engaged very much in this challenge. I've also talked to the President. President Bush and I had a conversation this morning. He is concerned, obviously, about the situation, and I talked to the Secretary of Homeland Security, Secretary Chertoff, as well today. We are going to get as much support as we need from the federal government, and we're going to work with FEMA in terms of making sure they help us with things like water and other supplies that we might need. We're going to work with the Corps of Engineers. They can help provide things like temporary levees, for example, if necessary, and other equipment to support our guard effort. And we will make sure that we get a timely response in terms of any presidential declaration for these counties that are affected. We'll move in assessment teams into these counties as quickly as humanly possible so that we can give some financial assistance to those individuals and perhaps some businesses. It depends on the extent of the damage, whether it's in the form of loans or grants or a combination of both. Between the state and the federal resources, we'll do everything in our power to help these individuals, to help these families, and to help these communities rebuild and recover. Along those lines, I want to encourage those that have been impacted, for example, having to leave your home due to the flooding, to save all receipts, to document expenses related to these natural to this natural disaster and to this flooding. And if you do qualify for either a state or federal program in the future, we will have a detailed account of those expenses. Water heater replacement, for example, other appliances that might have to be replaced, please document those. So when and if it comes time to file a federal or a state claim, that we can speed things up with that type of information. We're also very concerned, obviously, about the impact this flooding is having on our farmers across the state and on our agricultural sector in particular. To see the devastation out there is heartbreaking, certainly, given the fact that we know how hard our farmers work to get those crops in the ground. And we're going to be very supportive in terms of working with federal officials and the Farm Bureau and other groups, the Corn Growers Association and the Soybean Association, to help those farmers in need as well. And it really will also require some patience here as we move forward. Again, our top priority is public safety. I think we've done a very good job to date in that area. We have had two fatalities, unfortunately, and certainly our thoughts and prayers are with the families of those victims. One was a accident attributed to wet conditions on the roads and due to hydroplaning in Wright County, and then we had a fatality in DeWitt as well. There was an accident on a farm. A gentleman was checking some damage to his property, and because of an accident related to the storm, he was killed. However, we've been able to, I think, help protect the public with things like these evacuations and building levees and taking important steps in terms of mitigation and response, and we will continue to make that our top priority. But then we obviously want to help these communities rebuild. I am committed to work with the legislature too, even if it requires a special session that I might have to call, given the magnitude of both the tornado in Parkersburg and New Hartford, and now the flooding that has affected 50% or more of our state by the time this is over. We will work in a bipartisan way at the Capitol, whether it's a special session or certainly as a top priority next session, to help these communities and to help these individuals as well. So with that, I'd be any one of us will be happy to take questions. Well, I think it'll be very helpful to have Director Paulson here, the FEMA director. He will do essentially what I've been doing along with General Dardis and Commissioner Meyer the past several days, and that is to get an aerial assessment of the damage and to see for himself the magnitude of this flooding challenge that we're dealing with. I think it also suggests that this is a priority for them, and that should help us in terms of speeding things up, getting assessment teams in, and again helping to get that presidential disaster declaration for the counties that qualify. It will also help us in terms of our continuing efforts to make sure that we have ample supplies of food and water if necessary, and that's one of the objectives of FEMA is to help assist in those efforts. So I'm glad that the director's coming, and I've been very aggressive in terms of my discussions with federal officials, including the president, and putting them on notice that we're going to need a rapid response, and I've been given a commitment that we will, in fact, get one.
Governor, there's been a lot of controversy about the way that the Salo Gulch Dam has been managed. Some people think that they should have let water out a lot earlier, that they should have controlled the flow differently. Do you have confidence in the way that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has managed the Salo Gulch Dam?
Well, I might turn that over to Dave Miller. He works with the Corps. He's more familiar with precisely how that has transpired here over the last several days. Dave?
I understand the controversy always about the dam and the releases from the dam. I think the Corps has done a tremendous job, but it is a delicate balance. When we work with the Corps this week, knowing what was coming into the reservoir, trying to control the pool so it didn't top and they didn't release an unnecessary outflow and cause downstream flooding, and at the same time not threaten the dam structure. That's a delicate balance for them. And we watched them do that. We watched them do it at Coralville. We've watched them do it at Sailorville. And we've talked to them already about Red Rock and other core structures downstream. It's not an easy issue. And the part that they have to deal with is, are they going to flood upstream and downstream? What are the threats to the structure of the dam, and how do they control that? And it is a bit of a science in how they do that. They have some requirements and thresholds that they meet. When the pool reaches a certain level, they are required to release more water from the dam, which causes complications downstream, especially if we've had heavy rain. And we're seeing that in Des Moines. And at the same time, if they don't release more water, it threatens the structure. And then we get to the stage, unfortunately, where we are now, where they are forced to release water over the spillway. And we've seen that in Coralville and in Des Moines as well. So I understand the question. It's not an easy chore for them, and we work very closely with them, and I know they work with the communities downstream. I think the mayor would speak for that, to try to give the most notice they can of what the effect will be to downstream communities.
First of all, there have been a lot of important steps taken in the Des Moines area and across the state post-93. This situation would have been even worse if it weren't for the fact that a lot of steps were taken statewide to further mitigate damage from the floods of and we learned a lot in 93, and I've said in the last several days that this flood has also proven that, you know, we've got more work to do. That issue is in large part a federal issue. I know in Mason City, for example, they've been having discussions about building additional levees to protect the water treatment plant there for several years. That needs to be done, and I expect that it will be done. And we will do everything here in the state to continue to encourage local communities to work with the federal officials and the Corps of Engineers to make further improvements where necessary. I want to say in response to both questions, however, this could be a 500-year type of event. Very few people could ever anticipate or prepare for, in some cases, that type of event. If we had to build levees statewide in response to what could be a 500-year event, that would be very, very tough to try to. You're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars potentially. So I think, in fairness to the Corps and others, we are dealing with something that is historic, certainly in its proportion. But that doesn't mean we won't continue to be vigilant and make improvements. I think it's not always a financial issue either. I think we can do a lot in terms of best practices. For example, where do we build in the future? If we're gonna make improvements to a water treatment facility, should we, are we making sure that we're building it on high enough ground, that type of thing? I think people will be more careful in the future in terms of those types of decisions when they are already going to make these investments in infrastructure, whether it's a power plant, a telecommunications center, or a water treatment or sewer treatment facility. So best practices and smart planning are going to be as critical in the future as building up levees in certain areas as well. Yes, Rod. Well, certainly hundreds of millions of dollars, I think it's fair to say, in damage statewide. I flew over numerous bridges yesterday across the state that were completely out. I know one of them cost $2 million, and it was just put in south of El Cater within the last couple of years. So significant infrastructure damage, and as I said, we will not know county by county the damage assessments until we have a chance to go in with these assessment teams in places like Cedar Falls and Cedar Rapids. For example, those teams can't go in because they're still evacuating people from that area. But I can tell you we will turn those around as quickly as possible. But I think it's fair to say that we will have numerous counties, certainly, that apply for a presidential disaster declaration, and I believe quite a few will receive that presidential declaration. Absolutely, yes. Again, we are seeing. We have 9 rivers right now across this state, every major river in the state of Iowa, not including the Missouri and the Mississippi, that are above record level or very close to record level. That's all-time records. And many of them are 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet above those records. So this is, again, unprecedented in terms of its power and destruction and scope.
Can you give us any kind of gauges to what extent the agricultural damage is?
Lieutenant Governor Judge, have we gotten any numbers on that?
No, it's too early.
Yeah, it's
too much water.
Again, it's too early to know, you know, but it's likely you're talking about extensive damage. However, if we can get a break here and dry out, a number of those farmers hopefully will have the option of putting soybeans, planting them again, since it is early enough, and that might be a kind of a saving grace potentially, but it's still going to be extensive, certainly to the corn potentially. You know, I'm not, because in Linn County, and I was just there in Cedar Rapids, they have the very best professionals, law enforcement officials, firefighters, literally going door to door with the National Guard there to back them up. And they are being very aggressive, and we're helping to back up their message. I also visited the shelter in Cedar Rapids at Roosevelt Middle School there and talked to some of the evacuees, and was glad to see that there were a number of people there. And I think we've gotten these warnings out in a timely manner as well. And as the commissioner said, these mandatory evacuations are not given lightly. So we will make sure that we continue to talk about how serious the situation is, and I think because of that, more people will follow our direction and do the right thing and evacuate. Thank you very much.